Today, we bring back a series that we featured on this program last year. It's about the sound of history, and it was produced by Ben Manila. Every year, the Library of Congress chooses 25 recordings to preserve for all time in its National Recording Registry.
That's one small step for man.
You know the fellow's name?
I should.
Well, then who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the fellow's name.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who?
The first base.
Who?
The guy playing first.
Who is on first?
Land is my land.
Ask not.
Presented by Palm Olive. The beauty soap made with gentle olive oil.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
The first in our series this month is the album Burnin' by The Wailers, before they were known as Bob Marley and The Wailers. It was released in 1973 and went on to become a huge breakthrough for reggae internationally. The album was added to the recording registry this year. Today's profile of Burnin' includes a cast of three, the man who produced the album.
My name is Chris Blackwell. I was the founder of Island Records, and now I'm spending a lot of time in Jamaica, working with hotels and community projects.
Then there's Bob Marley's widow, Rita Marley.
My full name is Alfarita Constantia, and I was Anderson before I became Bob Marley's wife. I'm a singer in the band.
And a musicologist.
I'm Jim Hankey. I'm the chief curator at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum in Cleveland, Ohio, and I'm also the author of the book Bob Marley Legend. When the Wailers began, it was Bob Marley, Peter Tosh, and Bunny Livingston. The three of them started out as a vocal group. In the beginning, the Wailers, it was almost like the Beatles or something like that. It was these three great guys who worked off of each other and managed to really capture this tremendous spirit and tremendous, you know, musical ability.
If you are the big tree, we are the small.
Going back and listening to the album Burnin', it was an album that in itself was a very influential album on what pop music would become. But it's also, it's just such an important record in the sense of really the way it speaks to the underprivileged people of the world to help them in their struggle.
We were grown and raised in the ghetto, so we knew nothing more than a ghetto life. And in the ghetto, it was a normal thing to go to bed and wake up with 100 or more policemen around your house, circle your house, and you can't come out, you can't even come out to use your bathroom. But I always sing of reality, and we're living in Trenchtown at that time. It's a reality when he said, this morning I woke up in a curfew. Oh Lord, I was a prisoner too. It's a reality.
This morning I woke up in a curfew.
This album, I mean, I think it's much more politically strident than its predecessor, than Catch a Fire was. A song like Burnin' and Lootin', that was really aimed at Jamaica's, you know, frustrated underclass. Later on, Bob said that Burnin' and Lootin' was really more a philosophical song and wasn't really meant to have people actually running out and burning and looting. But I think that when he wrote the song, that's not what he was thinking. I think he really was a call to action to this underclass in Jamaica to, you know, gain their freedom and assert their control.
You know, and so I would rather go burning and looting before I be a prisoner in this situation. So let's go burn and looting, you know.
That's why we're gonna be burning and looting tonight. I say we're gonna burn and looting. Burning and looting tonight.
Chris Blackwell, the head of Island Records, had lived in Jamaica and formed Island, and Bob Marley, sort of on his last legs after some other record deals had fallen through and all that, took the Wailers over to Chris's office in London.
When I first met them in England, when I first met Bob and the Wailers in England, they had gone to Sweden to do some work on a film, but the film collapsed, and so they were stranded in London, and somebody had actually rung me and said, would you like to meet them? And yet when they walked in the office, the three of them were so charismatic that, you know, they made a very strong impact on me. Made a deal with them literally on the spot. You know, it's one thing if you already have a name and people know your name and then the person walks in the room, you know, they're charismatic. But when people are sort of kind of down and out and they're charismatic, that's really pretty special. These guys together were rebels. They were naturally rebels and they wanted really what they really should have got and how they really should be treated.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Reggae was not considered serious music. It was considered novelty music. There were virtually no albums of reggae that were sold unless they were compilation albums. There was no serious consideration given to the musicianship of reggae. And so, when we'd finished that record, I sent it to lots of people. You know, I sent it like you know, one would send records to tastemakers, musicians, etc. And Eric Clapton was one of the people I sent it to.
I shot the sheriff.
When Eric Clapton sang I Shot the Sheriff, to us it was like, wow, it's like, well, wow, it's finally getting into the right ears that we had wanted it to be. But then, you know, normally they would not listen to us coming from where we're coming from. So it would take Eric Clapton to let certain type of people turn the radio on.
When he recorded that song, that was probably the biggest break, really, that that Bob had, because Eric at that time was literally like, you know, like God in the music business. And God had gone to Bob Marley for his material, so it pointed towards Bob and gave him a respect that catapulted him, really, into a whole other level of credibility.
Reggae was starting to catch on a little bit, you know, around the time of this Burnin' album, and then Clapton goes and cuts the song. Because it's Eric Clapton and it's a little bit more accessible, his version is slightly more accessible than Bob Marley's, so it managed to catch on, and that really, I think, was a turning point for Bob Marley and for reggae music. I mean, I think once that song caught on and became a number one hit in America, you know, the floodgates sort of opened. It's interesting, though, in retrospect, that Clapton has said that he doesn't really feel that he did justice to the song at all.
I shot the sheriff, but I didn't shoot no deputy. Oh, no, oh.
Right after Burnin' was released, Peter and Bunny both left the band. So it's really, this is the last album where the three of them are all together.
I think Burnin' stands up today. Basically, it has great songs. It has great songs in it. It has songs of Peter Tosh singing. It has songs of Bunny singing. It has the classic I Shot the Sheriff. It's something which I think represents the beginning of a whole movement, in a way. I think that's really part of the reason that it is so important still today.
Well, I think of a freedom fighter, not just fighting a battle of war, gun and bayonets, but one who took music as a weapon of an instrument of arm that you could use to bring peace to the world. When we see this music coming through, we see one as a prophet speaking on behalf of those who they are not able to say something, speaking for those who are not able to go out and see what's on their mind. Bob Marley does this for many all over the world.
Feel them spirit. Feel them spirit. Feel them spirit.
A profile of the album Burnin', recorded by the Wailers. Another chapter from the National Recording Registry at the Library of Congress. Our story was produced by Ben Manila and Media Mechanics. Our parting words tonight speak of liberty and freedom, and they come from the mouth of the reggae great, Bob Marley, in his redemption song. He sings, "Emancipate yourself from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds." That's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Andrea Seabrook. Have a great week.